2010, we raised money for a soldier from here that was killed in Afghanistan, and moved that record up to, we doubled the July 07 record. We made 222 hours, 22 minutes, and 22 seconds. Really, just the training for all those was, I'm not convinced I'm still probably paying a price for that today. The long days right here at my house, we do the long rides, 2-3 days, you know, through the night, the whole sleep deprivation, managing the hallucinatory experiences, some of which I can still recall today in vivid detail. They're harmless, but you just have to have a crew that can help you manage all that stuff. But learned a lot on those rides. And two of the rides that I failed on still had lessons to be learned so that I could get better. You know, you're not always going to be successful. Sometimes you'll have failures, but there's always a message in those failures, and it's not a reason to quit.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the Venture Mentality Podcast, and I am your host, Jacob O'Connor. Today is Wednesday, November 25th. It is also the day before Thanksgiving, so hoping that most of you guys are off and just having a great time with your family and a pretty relaxing day. No better way to spend a few extra minutes of downtime than by listening to your favorite podcast, Venture Mentality. In this episode, I sit down with George Hood. George Hood has set 13 world records, and what's perhaps more remarkable is that he has set 13 world records in 16 attempts. So that's a pretty high win percentage for him right there. And he is quite the remarkable guy with a lot of passion and a lot of drive, and there's a lot of valuable points in this episode that I can't wait for you guys to sit down, tune into, and hopefully take away some great things in this episode. One of the points he really likes to emphasize is the power of focus that he put into his life. When he realized that these were the world records and the goals that he wants to hit and set, he was going all in all day, training 6-7 hours a day. And sometimes, you know, that's what it takes to get where you want to be. So I think that George is a great person who really exemplifies what the power of focus can do for you. So with that being said, let's get right into the interview. And welcome back, everybody. This is the Venture Mentality Podcast, and I'm your host, Jacob O'Connor. Today joining us is George Hood. George is an ultra endurance athlete with 13 world records in 3 different endurance categories. George, how are you doing?
I'm great, Jacob. Thanks for having me on.
Of course. Looking forward to it. So right off the bat, one of the things with you that I found very interesting is, yes, you have 13 world records and they're all very impressive, but your job before you really got into the endurance side of things, I thought was pretty neat and interesting. What was it that you did before this?
And I retired as a special agent with the Drug Enforcement Administration out of Chicago. Spent about 26 years on the street with them. And I started my agent career with NCIS back in the day after I left the Marine Corps. But the bulk of my time was with the DEA out of Chicago here.
So what influenced you to get into the Marine Corps and then ultimately become a special agent?
Well, I wanted to be—I wanted to get into the military and serve, and I wanted to be an officer. So, I graduated from college, was commissioned as a Marine officer, and was the first Marine in my family. And since then, I've had 2 of my 3 sons have been Marine officers. So, that's always nice. But I served just my initial 3.5 years, and then I got out and went into NCIS. I wanted to do federal law enforcement, and I wanted to be a special agent at one of the agencies. Every agency has special agent positions. So I wanted to go with NCIS. It was a good place to start. And having never been, you know, a police officer before, I learned the right way to do things and did real well, distinguished myself at the academies and so forth, and enjoyed it. I was single at the time and really enjoyed the work. I tended to move into the narcotics arena most of my time with NCIS, which has ultimately prompted me to go with the DEA and work bigger cases, more international in scope, and had a lot of fun doing that. And physical fitness was always a part of that whole stream from the Marine Corps right up through law enforcement. in the Marine Corps, you know, fitness is a leadership trait and always will be and should be. And it speaks to one's command presence. If you look the part, your troops will follow, you know. And in law enforcement, being physically fit is often one of the requirements at the academies that people go to, because in law enforcement, you're being physically fit may mean, you know, it speaks to agent survival. If you can't run, if you are out of shape and you can't, you know, when you have an encounter on the street with a bad guy, they know within 3 to 4 seconds if they can take you or not. And you have to be able to react to that. You have to look the part. And so that always inspired me to stay fit and look good and feel good. That's just what fitness does as we age and get older. And I've told my kids about that, and they follow my example, and they're all in federal agent careers right now as we speak. So, and then being in Afghanistan after I retired from DEA, I went over to Afghanistan to do some work over there, and with the Marine Corps, obviously I was embedded with them. And I can tell you right now, you have to be fit to go over that. That's I was a qualifier right from the get-go. And being a retired agent meant nothing. If you couldn't handle the physical fitness part of that environment over there, you wouldn't last. And that truly speaks to survival on the battlefield. So that's where I'm at, brother. And I like being the best. I pick things that I can do, and I always ask myself how long I could do that for. And I don't do anything too outrageous. You know, I stick with pretty much plank, cycle, stationary bike. And now I'm into the push-ups, and that's going to be the next big thing coming in 2021. So that's where I'm at. There's no end in sight.
So obviously you mentioned that physical fitness was a very important part of your career path, but how did you, it's one thing to be fit and to go to the gym. It's another thing to set all these world records. So how did you get turned on to the idea of, hey, I'm going to go out and attempt to make and set these world records?
Because people often use the term working out. Working out is an incomplete sentence. It means it's rather vague. I don't use that term anymore. I train, and I encourage the people I work with to train, because training implies purpose and intent. And therein lies my the basis for setting world records. You have to have a goal. If you're going to go to the gym and just work out, that's great. But if you don't know why you're there or what the end result is, I'll be quite honest with you, most people go to the gym, it's a social environment, okay? They'll spend 3 or 4 hours in there and get very little done, but they'll make a lot of connections, you know what I'm saying? So I don't have that kind of time. I'd rather spend 6 to 7 hours a day training on my own to pursue, you know, certain feats that will distinguish me and at the same time raise money for charities and serve as the right example for the world, as well as my 3 sons.
What was your first world record that you set?
It's back in 1986 in Honolulu, Hawaii. I was a young special agent with NCIS. It was in the middle of an undercover operation at the time, and I was training at the YMCA. Well, back then I worked out because I didn't learn what training was until I matured. So, but at the YMCA there in Honolulu, they hosted me, and we ended up, I started skipping rope back in the day. It was interesting. You know, I remember seeing a guy, the soccer coach at my alma mater, Indiana University of Pennsylvania, skipping rope down in the gym, you know, at the field house. So I bought a rope from him. It was one that had plastic links in it, you know, and it's fairly somewhat weighted. And so I started doing that and kind of liked it, and put some music on, and I would skip. And sure enough, there was a world record for it. And, we did it. I was training at the YMCA and got all my long jumps in every other week, you know, ramped up to it. And we set that record in the fall of 1986, right after I got back from an operation over in Italy. And that was the first one. And from there, I obviously had to work and had a career to manage. So I got married and so forth. But then after that, I pursued the rest of those records from about 2006 on.
So that was
probably the last 14 years or so I've been, I set the rest of them.
There's a long gap there between that first world record you set and then the other ones that you pursued. After you set that first one, did you know, like, hey, down the road, I'm going to pursue other ones, or what changed?
Absolutely. Yes. I knew there would be another opportunity because I like the thrill, you know, I like putting the events together. Sometimes they're a pain in the ass, but you know, especially when you're trying to work with a not-for-profit and trying to raise money for the charity, that's an additional component you have to try to manage. And I'm just the draw. I'm not a not-for-profit. I am just the draw. I'm the one that attracts the attention to get people to give, to donate, and so forth. But yeah, I knew there would be other opportunities. It was just a matter of when. And once I got transferred back to Chicago with the DEA is when I realized the stationary spin bike was going to be the next one. Because I was using that at the gym early morning before going downtown to work. And that's when I went over to the bookstore, looked up the record. And sure enough, there was a record for the stationary spin bike. And I was known for that for quite a while. I set that, I had five attempts. I was successful on three of them. And I'm the only guy in the world ever have set three world records on the stationary spin bike.
What were the world records?
First one was in July of 2007, 111 hours, 11 minutes, 11 seconds. And then we came back in, did at the YMCA here in Naperville in 2008 before I went overseas. And we set that one at, I remember it was 2009, I can't remember, 2008. We set that at about 175 hours, something like that. 177 hours, 45 seconds, something like that. And then I came back again, and in the fall of 2010, we raised money for a soldier from here that was killed in Afghanistan. And moved that record up to, we doubled the July 07 record. We made 222 hours, 22 minutes, and 22 seconds. Really, just the training for all those was, I'm not convinced I'm still probably paying a price for that today. The long days, right here at my house, we do the long rides, 2-3 days, you know, through the night, the whole sleep deprivation, managing the hallucinatory experiences, some of which I can still recall today in vivid detail. They're harmless, but you just have to have a crew that can help you manage all that stuff. But learned a lot on those rides. And two of the rides that I failed on still had lessons to be learned so that I could get better. You know, you're not always going to be successful. Sometimes you'll have failures, but there's always a message in those failures, and it's not a reason to quit.
What were some of the lessons that you learned in that long ride?
Manage your ego. You can't go into these things thinking you're the superstar. I am the best at what I do, but you have to be able to realize that that success comes because we've all been blessed with inherent gifts to give and to use throughout our lives. Those gifts, if you use those gifts in service to a greater good, you will be successful. Because it's not always about you. It's not. And my ego is such that I don't need that. At one time, I did. When I get in close to game day, you know, I realize, you know, I am the biggest, you know, I'm the best. And you have to be. You have to be strong and confident in what you're about ready to do. Same thing's true on the battlefield. If you don't believe you're the biggest badass on that battlefield and you're going to survive, you may not survive. So, a lot of times there's a place for one's ego. It's managing it after the fact. And some people just aren't successful at that. And, they don't last. You just look at Instagram and how many people on Instagram now, they won't be, you know, 3 years from now. I've been doing this stuff since 1986, and they refer to me as the legend because I've been doing this for the last 15 years or so now. And I've lasted and I continue to do what I do because I'm raising money for charity, and it's learning to keep that ego in check. We weren't successful on that ride, and we crashed, and I'll never forget it. It was total loss of the mind-body connection. Couldn't make the wheels, couldn't make the pedals go. And that's the bike right there I did it on. But that was one of the biggest lessons, you know, was to get, you know, keep the ego in check. Don't exceed, you know, expectations unless you can. And just realize that you're there. You're blessed with a gift to do what you do. And don't take that for granted. Don't ever take that for granted. Or you just won't last. Most people don't set more than one, maybe two world records in their life. You know, I've got 13 of them, I think. Yeah, 13, 16 attempts, 13 successes. So
as you just mentioned, the most people don't set more than two, you've got 13. And obviously, you know, you're getting older. How have you been able to physically maintain this high level of performance?
Well, it doesn't come without a sacrifice. And I train now for the push-up record that I'm pursuing. About six hours a day to get it all in. That's cardio, that's leg work, that's core work, that's obviously push-ups, and a little bit of plank work, but I don't do as much plank as I was doing this time last year, you know. But it's staying in shape, maintaining your fitness, eating well, and just taking care of yourself. Don't engage in risky behavior. Stay away from those relationships that are toxic, that will suck the energy out of you. That because you can't do it all. I am single. I don't see anybody. I pretty much stay. I go to work every day. I train. And that's my work. I show up every day, and then on game day, I deliver what I said I was going to do.
What does your recovery look like? Because I can imagine that your workouts 6-7 hours a day, they're very intense, but obviously you have to be able to recover to keep going at that high level.
I'm sore every night. Especially with the push-ups, because I'm knocking out 5,000 to 6,000 a day in about – no more than 5 sets. So you can do the math, but unlike plank, when I was doing, you know, 30 to 35 hours a week, I'm more sore physically from push-ups, but I'm getting stronger. But the recovery is such that I mostly generally overnight, and then I'm prepared. I can hit it again this morning, after we're finished, and get through it all. But it's after an event, it's a total body soreness from head to toe. If you don't feel that, then you probably did something wrong, because it should be, that stress should be distributed equally over the entire body. And that's how I always know that I gave it my all. And there's never, ever anything left on that platform in terms of energy, effort. It's everything I've got, and and that's reflected also in the way I recover. It's because I'm out of pocket for about 2 days. Yeah.
So what is your view on mind over matter then? You say you're going all out all the time. What is your perspective on that?
Well, mindset matters more so when you get into long events, endurance type stuff. You don't have to have a mindset to get out of bed in the morning. That's just called life. That when you do things extraordinary, yes, mindset matters. You have to have what I call that warrior mentality, where you're in the fight, literally the fight of your life, when you get involved in things like this. And I just flip a switch that I don't quit. I don't stop, you know, and that's the difference. There's a difference. Quitting implies failure. You know, on event day, I feed off of other people at a crowded venue. Loud music, you know, that'll drive me to stay even more focused so that I accomplish the objective. But I rehearsed that mental toughness oftentimes here at home, especially with the plank. I used to plank I would do 3-hour plank with no music, no TV, no nothing, just total silence, just me and the dog. That's tough. That's tough. So that's hard work.
And as you're talking about the planks, most people struggle to do a plank for, you know, a minute, 30 seconds or whatever it is. And here you are doing it 18 hours out of 24 hours in a day and other spectacular numbers. How have you managed to do this? What have you figured out that other people just don't seem to get?
It's the commitment. We are all capable of doing whatever we want to do. I just do this on my own. I'm raised from the ground up. I can take on just about anybody. And they know it. I don't get much competition. But it's just staying focused and committed to goal, and you survive the fight, you know.
What are you thinking as you're, you know, in your, that plank position for 10 plus hours? Like, what is going through your mind whenever you're starting to get tired?
Well, I have a coach that's beside me, and you'll see them in a lot of the video footage. There's usually two of them, and they're good at what they do. Renee Cobley is my cognitive coach. She's out of Australia, and she was there for this plank. She actually flew here to be by my side because that's the only voice I listen to. I'll feed off the energy, and if for some reason they leave the room or there's nobody around, you know, I don't expect everybody to stay there all day and watch. You know, it's a long, long day, but they're always there for the beginning, and then when you break the record, and then when they come back when you set the new one, you know. So, but she often speaks to my in my ear and tells me it's okay, we're surviving, you're doing well. There's people up that you can't see who are moved by what you're saying. They like your music. So it reinforces me because I get tired, but I go through stages. I go through walls, just like when you run a marathon. You know, I go through periods where it sucks. It hurts. It's not fun. It's not pleasant. But once the numbness sets in and I crank the music up a bit, I'm good.
George, this has been a great interview. I've got two more questions. The first one being, where can people find you online if they want to reach out or learn more?
I don't have a website. I don't need one. People can find me. I track most of my exploits are on social media, probably at Instagram at hood4663. Yeah, people can connect with me there and message me as appropriate if they'd like to for any additional insights. I always respond. I always stay engaged with those who message me. And get back to them as quick as I can. But that's where you'll see a lot of the updates regarding this next endeavor with the push-ups. Do you have another question?
Yep, I got one more. So I will link that for you guys so you can click on that. It'll be in the description.
Yeah.
Good luck with your next endeavor with the push-ups here. But last question. So when you die, the only thing that matters is the difference that you made and the impact that you had. So that being said, what difference or what impact are you looking to make?
The difference I think I've made in this whole journey with the setting of world records is that it is indeed possible if you are mindful of the blessings that you have to facilitate such success. Okay. And the impact I have is that I've changed lives. We've probably saved some lives when I think about it. I know we've inspired countless people around the world with the simple message that anything is possible. You see people doing plank challenges on Instagram. I started all that. When I came back from China and setting the world record over there in 2014, I'm given credit for bringing the plank to the West. And the Chinese will tell you that. Because they loved us over there. But that's impact.
All right, guys. I hope you enjoyed that interview. I know that I did. I had a great time sitting down with George, and he had a lot of great points to share and offer. Really try and focus in on one point and apply it into your life. If you can take away just one point from each of these episodes that I put out, then I think that you can see things dramatically start to change in your life, which is ultimately the goal of what we're doing here. So I hope that you guys are able to do that. And If you guys got some sort of value from this episode, I just ask that you would text the link to just one or two friends. If you got something valuable from this episode, then you have the ability to help them and to help other people in your life also get value out of this episode. And at the same time, it helps me grow my listener base, which is part of the mission of what's going on here. So again, I appreciate your guys' support. Thank you guys for tuning in. Hope you all have a great Thanksgiving.